This is 69 the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been online now for more than a decade, looking at the digital signage industry and filtering the BS. Now it's also a podcast, a chance to talk to smart people doing interesting things in this business. You can listen to episodes online, grab it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to get the RSS feed. 69 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. In this episode, I'm speaking with Florian Rotberg, the managing director at Munich-based digital signage consulting and events firm Invitus. Florian talks about the background of his company and his impressions of the global digital signage market. We had our chat in a noisier than expected press room in June at Infocom, just ahead of the digital signage summit he put on there.
All right, so we're here in Las Vegas. This is the first time you're doing a conference in the U.S., is my understanding. Back up a little bit and tell me a little bit about what Invitus is all about, because it's a couple of things at least, right?
Well, yeah. Well, thanks for having me here. We started Invitus 10 years ago, and we're specialized in digital signage consulting. That's what we do. We're based in Munich, Germany, and we're helping end customers as well as the industry to find their role, their proposition in the digital signage world. Most of the stuff we're doing are RFPs for big enterprise customers. So
companies. You're writing them?
Well, we're writing them. We're doing everything. We're doing the whole concept for them.
Okay.
And in the beginning, it was only digital signage. Nowadays, we're doing whole digital transformation concepts for them, digital roadmaps, because the whole organization often has to change. It's not a silo installation, not a silo.
Yeah, thing it anymore. Makes no sense just to.
That's a good thing about it, but that has already changed in recent years.
Oh yeah.
5 years ago, they were still looking at silos, and we went to the customer asked us for help, and then there was a guy from marketing and one from IT, and they've never spoken with each other before. And so we were basically, helping them finding the right things and defining everything, putting an RFP, and then also, helping them and rolling it out. We're not doing it ourselves, but being always, the expert on the side of the customer helping it. And we've done this for huge customers, for global projects, and that's the main work we do on our consulting side. Obviously, the stuff we're most known about is our conferences. That's a conference we started in Munich 10 years ago now. It was at that time the Invitus Digital Signage Conference. Nowadays, it's a DSS, the Digital Signage Summit. And this has grown to the most important event in Europe and Middle East. And last year, we decided to join forces with IEC, which is part of Infocom and CEDIA, as most of your listeners probably know. And this has given us a fantastic boost, to grow to more than 500 attendees. And to be honest, we're here in Vegas today, but in 2.5 weeks' time, we have our huge conference in end of June in Munich, and we're expecting more than 600 people and 40 speakers, 2 days, and it will not only be about digital signage, but also digital out of home, so the advertising part of it, and as well as smart city, because we see a lot of demand in this area. There's a big interest. I mean, there hasn't been really successful projects. There was a lot about fuss about New York and Dubai and all these places. We all know that business case is not as easy as many of them think. And to be honest, I'm quite skeptical about most of these business cases. But anyway, for governments and for municipalities, and so it's interesting and it's fashionable. And digital signage as a digital touch point is always important in all of these smart cities projects. So half of it is on mobile phones, and the other stuff is on big screens, to show the activities of smart city to the public.
How big is the company?
With 10 employees plus,
a roster of freelancers and contractors
Exactly. We're based in Munich, Germany, and we have some small activities in recent years also in the Middle East. So currently I'm shuttling back and forth between Dubai and Munich, and that's what we do,
And does DSS sort of function as I realize it's its own entity and thing, but is it a lead gen tool for you guys by happenstance?
Oh, yeah. I mean, to be honest, it started as a customer event. That's how we started 10 years ago. And obviously now we get all our existing customers and new customers there. And 40% of them are enterprise clients, so end users who are attending the conference. So that's fantastic. So these are the big Fortune 500 companies of Europe. Obviously not all of them, but many of them. So yes, it helped us a lot. But it also attracts, unfortunately, competition, but that's what we have to work with. So all the big strategy consultants, they're all attending, and Accenture is there.
But they have to pay you to show up.
They pay. Don't worry about that. But that's part of the game. And to be honest, that happens for us more and more. Often they win some RFPs, because that has also changed in the past 2 years. That even our work is now being RFP'd by enterprise customers, because it's a big chunk of money and time. So often they win because they have better connections, McKinsey's and whatever, Accenture's. But often they come back to us and hire us as experts, because we know the market, how it works, and we can save them a lot of time.
And how did you end up in like 10 years ago, how did you find your way into digital signage?
Beforehand, I was working with Oliver Schroeder, that's the guy I launched Invitus. We were working at an IT publishing house. And we were doing business consulting there for customers and testing and everything. And you know, then the publishing arm went down the drain, obviously. As print didn't work out 10 years ago.
And I come from newspapers.
You know that. And so we decided, okay, you know, we have to do something new. And we took some of the customers and did some testing about digital signage and notebooks and everything. That was really early. You know, the expression digital signage was just born. But you know, we were looking at solutions because we saw that hardware itself was a commodity and wasn't really changing everything. But right. but looking at this one, and so we came up, and there was nothing in Europe at that time. Mm-hmm. And so we basically, you know, started studying, collecting information. We started our own blogs, the same as you did. Mm-hmm. And so that helped us a lot because we were like the spider in the net. So all the companies, a few companies who were in digital signage, brought us the information, and we collected them, distributed mm-hmm. them again. And so we started the digital signage business. And nowadays, mm-hmm. we're one of the leaders in digital signage in Europe.
And is there... I realize you're just kind of over here, and most of your work's been over in Europe and Middle East, but do you see a distinction in the way things are done, in the mindset and everything, between North America and Europe, Middle East?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In what way?
In many ways. The way digital signage is done in Europe is quite different. All the, you know, power consumption, all this stuff, it's really important in Europe. Mm-hmm. And for example, in here in the US, you run your system 24/7 if it's possible. Yeah. Because even if your shop is closed, you want to show people passing by your shop that you're running and everything is fine and communicate with them. In Europe, usually you turn it off because customers don't like it. You know, that energy is wasted at times when the shops are closed. Yeah. So this is one of the most important things. So energy is much more important. And also content-wise, I think content concepts are more sophisticated in Europe. People mm-hmm. spending more money on this one. On the other hand, networks are smaller usually because countries are smaller. Right. Pan-European networks are still rare, but they're coming more and more. And it's really funny in the beginning. Companies start doing some pilots, some concept stores, and then they mm-hmm. start rolling out on a regional, on a national level. And now we're looking at big enterprise customers doing RFPs for global projects mm-hmm. because now they know they have to do digital signage. It's not an option anymore. Right. So they're looking at how can we roll out a concept which works around the world. Mm-hmm. And that obviously is very, very difficult from the hardware and the service part. And the content mostly of the time it's a little bit easier because that obviously scales and it's similar around the world.
So when you say content seems to be more sophisticated when it's coming out of Europe. Mm. Can you describe that a little bit? Like, what are they doing that's different? Or is it just a mindset that we have to spend some money on this?
Well, I think there's a better awareness for spending bigger budgets on, mm-hmm. on content in Europe. Then we have so many languages, so we don't have the scale as you have. You do everything in English, and then that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
We have so many different cultures, and you know, looking at Spain, UK, Germany, Scandinavia, the culture is so different. You have to also adapt your content to these cultures. So there's a little bit more for sophistication in the way content mm-hmm. is done. And I think the US is more data driven. You're much further with this one. Mm-hmm. And obviously also including social media. That's a thing which has some legal issues in Europe. So the network operator, the media owner, is responsible for all the content.
Right.
So we cannot just, you know, take social feeds and show them on the screens because the responsibility that we need to have an editor mm-hmm. who looks at every single tweet and approves it, which obviously makes it much less comfortable as you can do it over here.
And there have been a number of companies, software companies, that have tried to kind of extend themselves into Europe and the Middle East. And while some of them are still doing that, I don't know that any of them have really grown and, you know, built out substantial offices. Is it a different cultural shift to go over and establish and try to do business there because it's not done the same way as North America?
Well, we're only looking at ecosystems. So the mm-hmm. software itself is not relevant. When we do RFPs, we will look at how is the ecosystem? How is the system integrator? How does he know the software? How much experience does he have with it? So just setting up an office as a software company in Europe won't help you. You have to set up an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. You have to find partners. And the way partners are treated are totally different. Mm-hmm. We've seen a few times that American or North American companies coming to Europe and they said, okay, if you want to be a partner, you have to pay $10,000 and get training, everything. That doesn't work over in Europe, you know.
Yeah.
You don't pay up front and nobody does that. So and the support is also an issue. You mm-hmm. want to have, you know, support. English is fine, but it needs to be ideally in the same time zone.
Sure.
Because we've seen some customers who are working with companies on the West Coast, mm-hmm. and 9 hours time difference is basically the opposite of your working day.
Yeah.
And that's very, very difficult. So the support structure needs to be, it doesn't have to be in the same time zone, but close by.
Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing it here a lot, and it sounds exactly like what's happening in Europe, where end users are looking for quote-unquote a turnkey solution. They want that ecosystem. They want one vendor who's going to deliver the whole thing for them. Is that what you're saying there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially the big projects, mm-hmm. and then when they're a couple million US dollars, so there's only a few, two, three system integrators who are really able to finance everything and, uh-huh. and to offer everything out of one hand. And that's also one of the big opportunities for Samsung and LG and all of them offering their built-in media players, because they're building up now their own ecosystem. And for, you know, for easier projects which are not so sophisticated for corporate communication or so, mm-hmm. the hardware is totally sufficient, the media players. Mm-hmm. And that's something which is gaining more and more traction. We see that in many markets.
Are the verticals different? The things that are really getting traction, like over here, QSR has been hot for 3-4 years, really. Retail kind of doing its thing, and corporate communications really seems to be active now.
Yeah, there are differences. QSR is not as big in Europe. Uh-huh. I mean, QSR in general is not as big.
Yeah,
in
you
Europe.
Have high streets.
Exactly, we have high streets, and we have more individual restaurants. Mm-hmm. So, and fast food is not as popular as over here in the U.S.
So people aren't as fat.
Well, hey, maybe that's true. So QSR and digital menu boards are by far not as popular as, mm-hmm. as popular as over here, but it's coming more and more. But yeah, but it's not a big thing. Retail is most important. Transportation is really important. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, all the airports have digital signage for many years, but still, train station, that's something, you know, train station, the public transportation is a huge business over here, mm-hmm. over in Europe. And yeah, well, banking is working quite well, and in certain areas, also government. Mm-hmm. So Russia, I just returned from Russia 10 days ago in Moscow. Even in these crisis times, you know, government is still investing in sure. digital signage projects, and the same in the Middle East, where government is really important because they're financing university and all of these public mm-hmm. services and everything.
I would imagine it's challenging jumping between all these different countries, particularly in the Middle East and in Russia, where the normal rules might not necessarily apply. The ways that you win business and so on.
Yeah,
I realize you have to be careful about what you're saying, but
absolutely.
But it's different over there, isn't it?
It is. But on the other hand, it's really funny when you look at Russia and Middle East. They look so different, but the way the digital signage market is heading to, it's quite similar. And mm-hmm. They're both emerging economies. Mm-hmm. It looks really funny because we only see the glitter of Dubai and all the fancy stuff which is there. But when you look at the economy in general, it's an emerging market. The same with Russia, obviously in different stages and different. Image mm-hmm. phases, but these markets are not so different. Yes, politically they're different. The language is totally different. Mm-hmm. The state of mind is different. Mm-hmm. But when you look at, you know, how digital signage projects are being won and how digital signage projects are being maintained, it's quite similar. They both mm-hmm. have the same problem. They're only looking at capex. They mm-hmm. have budgets for investing in big screens and funky LED walls, whatever they have. But later on, they don't maintain the networks. They don't have budgets for content. So that's really bad. In Dubai, it's worse. After 1.5 or 2 years. Most of the systems are not being updated anymore. Mm-hmm. The content is not good, and its maintenance is not really done. So we see a lot of bad projects. You know, all the fancy stuff being set up, and after a short while, it looks quite bad. And Moscow, or Russia, to be honest, you know, there's Moscow, St. Petersburg, and the rest of right. Russia. So 70%, 80% of the digital signage projects are somewhere in the region of mm-hmm. Moscow and St. Petersburg. And these regions are similar, but the rest of Russia, it's horrible. Especially replacing a screen, there are 9 time zones, I think, in Russia, and it takes 2 weeks to change a media player or a display, so somewhere in the far Siberia area. So you definitely have totally different service levels, which is really different. But yes, it's challenging mm-hmm. flying back and forth. Especially in winter, you know, when you have 30 degrees Celsius centigrade in Dubai, and you fly to the deep winters, but you're from Toronto.
You don't so like? You know, well, you know, no, we don't. It doesn't get that bad here.
Well, it's true, yeah.
Or pardon me, in Toronto, but yeah. It gets bad here. It's 115 today, so.
Oh yeah, it's really hot.
Nasty. The sorts of projects that have impressed you are there ones that you've been involved in directly, or ones that you've seen that I get a sense that there's all kinds of things happening in Europe, in the Middle East, that nobody over here sees or knows about?
Well, I prefer to speak about, I prefer about other projects, not about sure. mine, because that's always difficult, and you know, for legal reasons and for other things. And to be honest, we have been involved in a couple of projects, but what impressed me the most is dynamic content. It's data-driven campaigns, mm-hmm. data-driven content, which is really, really picking up, and it's fantastic to see what you can do there. One of the most fascinating things is a big electronic retail chain, and I mean, they're fighting against Amazon. They're losing customers like crazy. Amazon is changing the price of a product up to 80 times a week before Christmas. 80 times, 80. Wow. It's unbelievable. So a brick and mortar retailer has no chance to compete with this one. So they said, you know, we are fighting so much against Amazon, but when a customer decides to come into our store, we need to make sure that if we show advertisement on our screens, it needs to be, the product needs to be available at that store at mm-hmm. that time. Mm-hmm. So connecting their database with the digital signage system and only advertising products which are available at that time in the store, it's something which really makes sense and which helps for positive customer experience in the store. Mm. And these are things which I really like a lot. For consumers, they don't see that, you know, how fancy the back office is. But that's something which really works, and it's really effective and works quite well. Mm-hmm. Other things which I like, obviously, you know, the big iconic ones. Everybody loves iconic ones. You go to New York, you go to Dubai, you see these fantastic video walls, these, you know, funky media facades and everything. Yeah. That's fascinating. I just returned from Dubai 2 days ago, and to be honest, I flew all the way from Dubai to here. And Burj Khalifa, you know, that the tallest building in the world, they're putting no advertisement on this one. And that's something we'll also show tomorrow at the DSS Las Vegas show. I will show a video. Jaguar launched their first SUV vehicle, and they have an LED facade 848 meters. So the whole Burj Dubai, Burj Khalifa was a Jaguar advertisement. And that's absolutely fascinating. You have the tallest building in the world with the most effective digital advertisement. That stuff, that's like a kid in a candy store. And some of them are like, wow, that's really fascinating.
It's one of the problems with these very high profile projects that there's an expectation that you can deliver this sort of thing on much more modest budgets. And that there's not an understanding of how much is involved in the, not only the capital investment, but the content investment.
Yeah, I mean, the bread and butter business of digital signage is not Burj Khalifa, to be honest.
Yeah.
The bread and butter is a standard 16:9 screen. Mm-hmm. You know 16:9 quite well. No, a standard screen with standard content, mm-hmm. which is you know, based on some rules and some of it. So that's definitely the standard stuff. We always, you know, try to help our customers to find the right mm-hmm. the right way to do that. But yes, the iconic one obviously are much nicer to speak about. But the main business, and something we talk about tomorrow, which is really important for Infocom and for the AV industry, because many people in the AV industry, they see the potential of digital signage, but they fear a little bit because they're quite strong in technology. They know how to install stuff, mm-hmm. but you know, content is such a different world. It's creative. You're speaking with strange people. They're using all Mac. All of these things which are quite
tattoos.
They have tattoos, long hair. They work at night. Yeah. Well, that's also you have IT nerds who work at night. No, but that's something. Two worlds are crushing together, mm-hmm. and that's something which you need to understand. And especially on the you have to help your customer, because most of the time on the customer side, still silos communication and IT, and you have to bring them together and make something out of it. But there's so much potential, especially on recurring revenues. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, the most interesting thing for the AV industry, to understand that you can have recurring revenues. You can, you know, grow with your customer. You get monthly feedback. You can invoice them once a month, which is a nice thing, and move on from there and grow the system from there. So there's lots of potential we see.
Getting all these guys to understand this is just not a margin business.
Exactly, yeah.
You can do more than just resell a display and a mount and all that sort of stuff.
Much more. Buy content. I mean, they need news, they need sport news, weather news, all of this stuff. Just buy it in bulk and like from companies like Screenfeed or wherever, you know, you can buy it and resell it to your end customers. And that's not a big margin, but it helps you to be in touch with your customer every month. You know, you can upsell, you have mm-hmm. upsell opportunities, and we see a lot of potential there.
There's a bunch of costs involved in putting this podcast together, so I'm very grateful for the support this podcast will get from our new and sole sponsor, Screenfeed. Here's founder and CEO, Jeremy Gavin.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of Screenfeed, the digital signage content store. As content people, we love great content, and we think Dave's doing a great job with this 16:9 podcast, which is why we've offered to sponsor it. If you'd like to see the content that we create on a daily basis, head over to screenfeed.com and check it out. Let us know if we can help you in any project you're working on. And do me a favor, if you don't find what you're looking for, shoot me an email at jeremy@screenfeed.com. I'm always interested in new ways we can help. Now back to the podcast.
And why don't you think more companies who are pro AV guys or systems integrators or whatever, why aren't they doing it? Why is it so hard to get them active in the area?
I can only speak for Europe, to be honest. Mm-hmm. For North America, I don't know the market well enough. In Europe, it's they still love box moving. They still love, you know, complex installations. That's what mm-hmm. they feel comfortable with. And the digital signage world is difficult for them, especially regarding the content, because often you're working with lead agencies. Mm-hmm. The lead agencies that, you know, does a general story, and then you're the specialist in adapting this content right. for digital signage. And they don't feel comfortable speaking with this agency world, and it's a different world. So that's the reason why they, you know, they mm-hmm. try. Oh, I prefer, you know, installing some whiteboards or some loudspeakers or whatever, and that's what they feel more comfortable in. But they need to change the way they look at business and
mm. How do you deal with clients who say we're looking for a wow factor?
I'm laughing because that's what pretty much every single customer in the Middle East tells us. You know, we yep. want wow. We don't care about sustainability. It needs to be wow. Well, it's always quite easy because we tell them, you know, wow, you have for a few weeks, for a few months, depending on how much budget yeah. you spend on your wow. But a good digital signage system should be, you know, running for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, wow is only really short.
It's got a short shelf life.
Exactly, yeah. So we say, yes, you need to have a little wow when you open your store. You need to have something, you know, to make some mm-hmm. buzz around it. But, you know, be prepared to invest much more into a sustainable concept and refreshing your content and be dynamic. That's much more effective. At the end of the day, it's ROI. Mm-hmm. And some regions, they say, I need an ROI of 6 months, which I say, okay, that's not possible. Mm-hmm. But an ROI of 2 years, absolutely is possible. And then, you know, you have three more years to take some benefits from. So. But it really depends on the concept and everything.
Yeah, is it getting easier to measure ROI?
It's still challenging. I think it has been easier in the past 2 years, but now it's getting more complicated because everybody's talking about omnichannel, and you got all
experience.
This experience, user experience, seamless experience, you know, all these expressions, the customer journey. Yeah. And so we have so many platforms we have to take care of now. Mm-hmm. So it's a mobile platform, it's online video and all of this. So it's getting more and more complicated again because there's no, if we just focus on digital touch points and digital signage, mm-hmm. I believe it's easier, but looking at the whole customer experience and the whole customer journey, that's obviously getting more complicated.
Is the business different in different countries? I know we talked about Russia and Middle East, but is it really different between Belgium and the Netherlands? Or?
Well, Belgium, Netherlands, most likely not. But I'm not sure if you're aware, but we are also doing a business sentiment index every 2 months. So we are serving 2,000 system integrators from Russia to Portugal, mm-hmm. from Scandinavia to Middle East. So we have a very good idea how the digital signage market and the business sentiment is in the market.
Right.
And so, yes, we see differences. Mm-hmm. We see differences between Italy and Spain or Italy and Germany, for example. But we also see that, you know, markets like the Benelux, Germany, Scandinavia, or UK, they're quite similar. Mm-hmm. Yes, we have Northern, Western, and Western Europe, okay. which is a little bit different, and then Middle East and Africa, obviously.
And what drives it up and down? Tied to economy?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, the economy is really, really important. And it's really fascinating to see who's, you know, which part in the signage value chain is picking up first. Mm-hmm. Often, it's the display vendors, because still enterprise customers are contacting display vendors first, because that's the touch point of digital signage, obviously.
Yeah.
So we often see, you know, a pickup of business sentiment with Samsung, NEC, and LG, and then we see, you know, 2 months later how it's also picking up in the system integrator and the software. The software mm-hmm. guys are almost the last one always, because they only get hold on a customer, on a lead, you know, once the system integrator has a better feeling of it. So we see some changes there. Yeah, but it's changing a lot.
Are all the countries kind of islands, or do you get deals that actually go across a number of countries?
In the past, they were islands, but mm-hmm. now this is changing now. End customers, our end users, are really looking at rolling out concepts across Europe, across the world even. Mm-hmm. And we have done some work for some big German premium automotive companies. Mm-hmm. And they had the problem that in each single market, they had you know, island installations, and they decided to roll out a global digital signage product.
Right.
And that's really challenging, but it's fascinating. And now they you know, two of them are now having a really fantastic system, which they control across the world with the same content, and it works quite well. And obviously it brings a lot of scale.
Right. Is there much of a barrier to entry for a company that wants to get into this space? I mean, I think that's one of the biggest reasons why there are so many software companies out there, is it's not that hard to get a rudimentary system going.
Isn't that horrible? I mean, we are counting, we have a list of digital signage software companies who are active in the European market.
What's your count?
It's more than 3,000. It's insane. It's absolutely insane.
3,000?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's so easy to offer a CMS system. It's. I mean,
3,000?
Oh yeah. The relevant ones are maybe a dozen. You know. Yeah. To be honest, yeah. But it's so easy to have a digital signage CMS systems. Everybody tries to do it. Yeah. And many of them just building their own system. Yeah. It's unbelievable how often we are countered with a customer said, "Oh, we just decided to build our own CMS system." Yeah. Mm-hmm. Said, "Why do you do that? Yeah. That's stupid. You know, you cannot benefit from other customers who are using the same system." Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's way too easy to get into the digital signage software market. Mm-hmm. On the system integrator side, we see consolidation. We see strong consolidation because budgets and financing plays a more and more important role, mm-hmm. and only the really big guys can finance a big project, like a global project. Yeah. We're talking about 10, 20, 30, 40 million, and that's definitely something where only really the big guys can have the capital to do that.
We've talked about data. In terms of other technologies that are starting to emerge in the space, are there ones that get you excited or intrigued?
Well, there's a difference between what I get excited about and
your clients get excited about?
Well, the clients, they want all big data, they want all analytics and all this stuff. Yeah. They want beacons and everything, but they're all overhyped, to be honest.
Yeah.
Beacon was like 2-3 years ago, everybody was talking about beacon and Internet of Things, and so yes, it will all come, but it takes much, much longer than customers expect.
It's just a piece in the jigsaw puzzle.
Exactly. So to be honest, currently we do a lot of stuff with analytics and CCTV. So incorporating CCTV and beacons and Wi-Fi and everything to do heat mapping and this stuff, mm-hmm. That works quite well, especially in the Middle East, where most of the retailers anyway obliged by law to put in hundreds of CCTV cameras, so we can reuse this feed and also use this for analytics, and mm-hmm. that's a nice thing. So we see a rising interest in analytics and also available budgets for this one. So to analyze how the traffic develops in the store, especially when you change certain things. It's fascinating to see these heat maps,
right.
and that's my favorite presentation when I first customers, when I bring in all the video feeds with them, we show them, and the whole team is looking like wow. So that's the biggest wow we have internally when we discuss with customers. But otherwise, analytics, it's many people talk about it, but only a few really in retail, and especially in the shopping mall business, they're willing to spend money on this. Mm-hmm.
The guy from Ubuntu, Canonical, pointed me to a company that does pattern detection for retail analytics with shoes. So it's doing pattern detection based on what individuals are wearing, and they can establish with some accuracy, considerable accuracy, demographics of the person based on recognizable shoes.
It's a great story, but I believe at the end of the day you need to measure how many people go past the store, how many go inside the store. That's the main metrics we have.
Yeah.
And then to look how they move inside the store and how much involvement is there with certain product categories I think these are the major metrics. Everything else is nice to have, but to be honest, even measuring or getting information about the mood of the customer is nice, but it's not really changing the needle.
Yeah, have you ever run into a customer actually wants that?
Yeah, and it's really funny because many customers come to us and say, we want to have that. I want to know exactly how old this customer is, all the stuff we've heard for the last 10 years. I said, you have this one big screen, people are passing by, and it takes a system, to recognize, the mood of the person, the age and the gender, and then the person is already past the screen when you have time to change the content.
Yeah.
So it's not going to work in a passage situation. Yes, mm-hmm. if you have like a big dwell time, then maybe it would make sense. But at the end of the day, it's nice to have and to talk about it, but it's not really changing the game. Mm-hmm. So yes, right message, right time, right place, it's still relevant. But look for a cluster of people you want to address, and then that's fine. Mm-hmm.
If you had to give a percentage to the projects that you've seen out there, what mostly in Europe, Middle East, what percentage would you say are doing it well? Like, is it 1 in 5 or 20%?
Less, I think 1 in 10 maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And why is that? Because I would agree, but...
Maybe it's even less. Well, there are a whole bunch of reasons. Sometimes it's budget. Sometimes the project manager, the person wants mm-hmm. it, right?
Yeah.
And he fully understands, but budgets are not available for various reasons. Often it's corporate policy. For a few months...
Policy there must be bad.
Well, most of it, unfortunately, yeah, because it's limiting the way.
It's in our mission statement.
Yeah, exactly. It's in our PowerPoint slide. Then it should be okay. Said no, that's not sufficient. Sometimes the person, the responsible person, is changing.
Mm-hmm.
That's that's often you know it's a big blow for many projects, because then somebody else comes up, he's from IT or so, and he's not so involved, not so passionate about it anymore. Mm-hmm. But the closer you get to the point of sale, the easier it is to have successful projects, because they see a positive ROI, mm-hmm. and the more relevant it is. The easiest is airports, for example.
Right.
You never have a discussion with airports. Public transportation, they all know they need to have this place. It just needs to be there. So there's never a discussion. But on the other hand, you know, the concepts for fits this place are quite simple. It's, yeah. it's an API, and that's basically it. But even there, we see differences. For example, you know, the fits this place and airports in North America are sorted by not by time as we have in Europe, but by alphabetical order. It has some historical reasons to that. But even that, you know, so you need different concepts there, and you need to look how, because, or we have in the Middle East or in Russia, we have the problem with different languages. Mm-hmm. So Arabic is, you know, it's from right to left, and Roman is from left to right. Yeah. And so this is an issue, the same with Russian. So do you show both languages at the same time, or you switch back and forth? And for example, Qatar Airport in Doha, they opened 2 years ago, I think, or so, and they have a fantastic layout and fantastic digital signage flight information display system. It's fantastic. The concept is right. The font is right. Everything, it looks really, really nice. So, and they managed to put Arabic and English both on the same screen.
And why do you think that worked? Is it because they didn't copy somebody else and they just thought about it and
They had the unique chance as they open a new airport to have some money to get a good agency there. And in these markets, it's quite interesting because you have lots of passengers who travel for the first time. So they always put also the tail logo of the airline next to the flight number, mm-hmm. because some of them really can't read, or it's difficult for them when they're right. so excited. And so for them, it's easier to recognize, oh, this is Emirates Airlines, or this is Qatar Airways, or so, to recognize the logo, and then they know which flight they're on. Mm-hmm. So in combining logo marks and Arabic and English and everything, putting everything on one page, that makes it quite sexy and quite attractive.
Okay, let's go back to the educational conferences.
Yeah.
Why are these valuable? What are people, when you get feedback, what are they saying, those who have attended?
Well, there are three things why people attend the digital signage conference. They want to learn something, they want to get ahead of their competition. Mm-hmm. The second one is they want to do networking. Mm-hmm. And the third one is, well, that differs. The third one is often, it's a mixture of learning, bringing their own leads or bringing customers in there and mingling with different people. Mm-hmm. So the education part is important, yes. People want to learn. They want to learn what's best practice. They want mm-hmm. to understand what they can use for their own business, for their own customers. And then they want to speak with the industry. They want to learn, you know, about new products. They want to learn about new solutions. But our conference are special. We never allow, even sponsors are not allowed to present at our conference, because we believe if somebody spends big money on tickets, they don't want to listen to, you know, a guy talking about the newest 55-inch screen, which is now...
Really?
I'm convinced about that. I've heard so many of these presentations. Mm-hmm. Even in Arabic or in Russian, which I don't speak and don't understand, but I see the slides and it just blows.
Yeah, you're gone.
Yeah, exactly. And I look in the audience and it's always the same. Yeah. So we say, yes, sponsors, and we need sponsors, obviously, and they get a chance to present themselves, you know, at lunch or at an exhibition in front of the conference room, but we don't want to have any product presentation, and really keen on this one. So we select. You cannot buy a presentation slot. Mm-hmm. We choose certain people. So that's the reason why here in Las Vegas tomorrow, we decided to get some people, some best practice people. We got, obviously, you know, some guys from Samsung, Diversified are coming, mm-hmm. For the Samsung 385 or 635? 635. Well, you know what I mean.
It's a bunch of numbers.
Yeah,
687, I
think. Yeah, it's a fantastic one. It's really fascinating. Mm-hmm. Even I see a huge challenge in updating the content for a long time.
Yes.
I'm quite skeptical about these flagship stores. I love them and they're great to see, but most of them, you know, are not made with a sustainable content concept. So there's so much wow into this one.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult to see how they upgrade this one.
Yeah.
And I assume, you know, in a year or 2 years, they will rebuild everything, close it and do something else.
Yeah.
But that's fine too, but that's something. But we also invited guys from AT&T, because their flagship store in Chicago is already there for 4 years.
Yeah.
And there's so much more to learn mm-hmm. from guys like this who have done and operated a store for 4 years, to learn what went well, what went wrong, you know, and how
yeah.
you know,
what happened after all the ribbons were cut and the
Exactly.
The executive moved on.
The budgets were gone and was not, you know, on the top of the agenda of the CEO anymore.
Yeah.
And so that's what I think it's much, much more important. So we try to invite, you know, the high rise, the greatest, the talk in town people, as well as people who have, you know, some experience and who could talk, share this experience, what happened in the years since the WOW opening.
And if I was going to go to the conference in Munich, would it all be in English?
Yes, English is the universal language.
You don't have to bring Google Translate with you?
No, that wouldn't help you, To be honest, in the past, we always had simultaneous translation, because we started as a German conference, and we always, but a few years ago, we decided to do everything in English, and the translation was also stopped 2 years ago, so that it's all in English. All the conferences we're doing are in English, so we're also doing one in Dubai in the end of the year, always in Moscow. That's bilingual, obviously, that we need that for the Russian market. It's Russian in English, but Johannesburg and obviously also conferences here in Las Vegas and in New York, they're all English.
Excellent. Thank you very much for spending the time with me.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and that you learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net, every day. 16.9 the blog and now the podcast are both properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.